You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda. Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So whenever I see her on an awards red carpet, I'm always like, I know she's not a lesbian because she's married right. to the guy, but I'm always like, yeah, she dresses like a lesbian because it's just too much.
Yeah.
It's like for a, sure. She's a magician. She's a goth magician.
It's the top hats.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a demisexual podcast, as in we are sexually attracted to Demi Lovato and Demi Moore. Why not? I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with TV writer and performer Joanna Bradley about the lesbian aesthetic. But first, some quick announcements. Our Patreon is truly the life force of this podcast. It's where we get the support we need to make the podcast actually happen. We literally would not be able to do it without our patrons. So thank you to each and every one of you who are a part of our Patreon community. And if you want to learn more, you can go to patreon.com/dykingout. We're going to be doing our March Zoom hangout soon. So you can still sign up at that tier and join in on the fun.
Yes, let's get that on the calendar, Mel.
Yeah, let's do that. We did a poll on the Patreon. No votes for morning. This much we know is true. It's not going to be happening in the morning, but...
Yeah, we're some sleepy sapphics over here. You can also support the pod by using the link in our show notes to get the Stereo app for free, where we are broadcasting live at least 3 times a week outside of the pod. Listeners are having so much fun interacting with us during the shows. That's right. You get to ask questions, talk back, or like today, bark at us. It's also your chance to hear from Cecilia, who likes to drop in occasionally with some commentary. And I know you all want to hear more from Cecilia. Now is your chance. She's absolutely adorable on it, which not a surprise. Speaking of Cecilia, reminder that we do have merch on Etsy, etsy.com/shop/dykingout, I think. All right. Gonna get this out of the way. I know it's a long shot, but if anybody has an extra kidney that they want to donate, just want to put it out here. You know, I have an audience, want to use it for good. It's not for me. My uncle has a failing kidney. He has been very sick, and he only has one kidney that was transplanted. It's failing. He needs another. And he's been just really, really ill at this point. And a kidney from a live donor who matches. So you have to be O positive, I believe, to be considered, and is having trouble finding a match. And he has a son who is trans and would donate, but because of the hormones and whatnot, they won't even consider him for a transplant. So it's, and he's been such a supportive and great dad in that regard. His son was a best man at his wedding when he married my aunt. He's just a good guy, and I feel bad, and I wish I could give him my kidney, but I can't. So I don't know if anybody's ever wanted to do that and you're within driving distance of the Cleveland Clinic, hit me up. Let me know. I know it's a long shot, but
worth a shot.
Anyway, 1 year in COVID times.
A fish.
It's crazy because, like, all of a sudden it seems like the end is nigh. There is a light at the end of the pan tunnel. And a lot of people are getting anxiety because of that, too, of having to, like, transition back to, like, a normal way of living. Because, you know, change, even good change, can be hard and stressful. We've all been working like really hard this past year to adjust to the circumstances and find a way to be like okay with this way of living.
Yeah, I'm anxious adjusting to the new normal that is fading away. So I'm getting anxious re-entering society. I'm anxious about doing stand-up again. So yeah. Rusty, even though we're all supposed to be, it feels like the playing field was leveled a little bit and we're all kind of reemerging.
Yeah, there have been people who've been doing comedy through the pandemic. I'm not too worried that I haven't been doing it, mostly just because for me, like live comedy without an audience that's like there and ready to laugh, it's like it's already hard enough. And then you put like the obstacles of like the outdoor shows, the audience that's all like spread out and then the masks covering their mouths so you can't hear any laughter. I'm like, well, if I can't hear laughter, I might as well be doing a Zoom show, which I did a Zoom show or like a Twitch show last night with Sarah Kennedy, past guest of the podcast. She has this really fun, if anybody is a fan of Sarah's, even if you're not and you want to be, you should be. She does this talk show every week. I think it's called like Sarah Kennedy and Friends. She has guests. She has segments. There are games. It was a really silly game she had us play. I got to do stand-up. We did a little interview. It was a little bit of everything. And I was really emotional, I think, because it's been a year. Also, oh, she moved to Albuquerque. But when we were talking before the show, I was like, I'm really sorry, Sarah, but I'm feeling like super emotional. And I could cry right now if I like let myself, because I miss you and I miss people and I miss like running into people at shows and catching up. And
I also did a past guest show this last week. I had two shows, and that's it for March, but they happened to be in this last week. I did Gina Bloom's Twitch show, and check it out. Nice. It's on Comedy Hub on Twitch on Sundays. It's called the Antidepressant Comedy Hour, and she's got a really good thing going. There are almost like 200 people tuned in.
Gina.
It was so good to do comedy to verified humans, but it was on Twitch. So you had a lot of like, you know, Twitch types on there. There was the comment section was outrageous. There are people enjoying the jokes and like reacting with like laugh emojis and, oh, that was so funny. And then there was just this whole conversation amongst the Twitch users that are like, is this really a comedy show? Is this really live? No. If it were live, we'd be able to like send in requests, like it's improv or something. Like they're like, this is pre-recorded. Yeah. Like it was all conspiracy theories. So ridiculous.
God.
But very good to do the show.
New beginnings.
Yeah.
Spring is around the corner. What a beautiful time to just bloom. Speaking of blooming, Demi Lovato just came out and talked about how part of ending her engagement made her realize just the extent of how queer she is, but that she's not ready to label herself as anything, right? What I don't want to butcher this.
I've just seen clips of the People article. And that was, of course, via our beloved Bette Porter Gallery, keeping us up to date on Celesbian gossip. It was the first thing I saw when I woke up this morning.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, Demi said, this past year I was engaged to a man, and when it didn't work, I was like, this is a huge sign.
I thought I was going to spend my life with someone. Now that I wasn't going to, I felt the sense of relief that I could live my truth. And what is that truth? That she's queer.
Which we already knew.
We knew that. But we didn't have the information with this specific haircut and dye job. So that makes it feel more real. She says, I hooked up with a girl. And I was like, I like this a lot more. It felt better. It felt right. Some of the guys I was hanging out with, when it would come time to be sexual or intimate, I would have this kind of visceral reaction, like, I just don't want to put my mouth there. I didn't know that. I'm just reading that now. I just didn't want to put my mouth there. That's the gayest thing of the week. For all of us.
She also says, I know who I am and what I am, but I'm just waiting until a specific timeline to come out to the world as what I am. I'm following my healer's timeline, and I'm using this time to really study and educate myself on my journey and what I'm preparing to do. Now, she's only 28, so yeah, it doesn't matter what age you are. This is all a journey, and that's just really cool that it seems like she's really putting herself forward. It could be really hard. Like, calling off an engagement is such a hard thing.
Not so hard when you're dating a psychopath or engaged to a sociopath.
So I don't know anything about this guy. Fill me in.
Okay.
I already believe it.
Max Erich was hot on her heels. This guy is a social climbing, manipulative sociopath. I remember seeing a Twitter thread in September around when I think it was called off, and it was a long thread. The first tweet is exposing Demi Lovato's manipulative fiance, Max Erich, who is an obsessive fame leech, a thread.
I didn't even know that it was called off. I remember she got engaged and I was like, oh, good. I hope she's happy because I know she's had a really hard time. But continue.
So it's blatant. And the thread really does a great job of laying it all out. But
maybe we post it in our show notes.
Yeah, definitely. We have to get this information out there. He has been essentially stalking her, and not just her, but a lot of other female pop stars that he's had crushes on, specifically Selena Gomez. So that's not, you know, the one Demi wants to be comparing herself to, especially. But like, he would, okay, create fan accounts. And then if there were actual non-bot fan accounts following him, he would direct them to Selena Gomez's page, Demi Lovato's, some other like young actresses, starlets with the same kind of vibe, being like, flood the comments and tell her to date me. Tell her that you want her to be with me. And then you see all these screenshots in the thread. He, even up to the week that he got together with Demi, he was posting these obsessive tweets, Instagram posts, comments about how much he loves Selena Gomez. There's a video of him flashing this S tattoo he has, claiming it was for, and saying like, see, this is how much I love you. And now he claims that the S is for something else. I forget the word, but like solid something.
Sociopath?
Yeah, sociopath. There's lots of screenshots of him infiltrating Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato fan groups and telling them, I'll follow you back if you tell her to date me. It's really psychotic behavior.
Dude, just go through a mutual.
Right. Yeah, and it's also his management. There's like proof of his management pushing a lot of little teeny bopper fan groups to get attention towards him.
You know that's a thing, though, that people like use their managers to try to get like hooked up with other celebrities.
It is. That doesn't surprise me at this point.
Actually, now that I say that, Melody, it really is only going off one example I know of one specific person I know who will remain unnamed. Maybe they've been on the podcast. They have used their manager and asked their manager, hey, is Demi Lovato? It was Demi Lovato that they were trying to ask out. And they're like, can you try to like set something up with Demi Lovato? Like, maybe, you know, it'd be good for her to be like in a public queer relationship or something. Is that something she wants?
What is this path to Demi? Are the Demi Lovato fans like the Swift fans? Are our ratings going to suffer for us even bringing this up? No, because we're team Demi.
We're team Demi. Yeah. Not that I'm not team Swiftie, okay?
Oh, we love Taylor.
Support her and all her ambitions. Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
I mean,
God. I mean,
what a positive role model.
Americana,
love her. I wish we could talk about her more, but let's do our due diligence and warn everybody against Max. So Max actually is around Demi's age.
Yes.
Okay.
And he's an actor. At the same time, he's also trying to cultivate a music career. So it's like right when the Demi relationship hit, finally, it's like then we got a single out of him. You know, earlier you were like, didn't Demi already come out? And she did. But you know what wasn't the case? She didn't have a documentary coming out in 2 weeks. So it's like, I trust no one.
She has a documentary coming out in two weeks?
Yeah, so of course.
So is that the timeline she's talking about?
Yeah, that's what the joke I was going to crack. But I was like, don't do it, Melody. Don't do it. Just try to have one nice thing here. But no, when you said the timeline cut, I was going to be like, here's the timeline. Her documentary is coming out in 2 weeks and we're generating buzz from the queer community to tune in. It's all nonsense. I mean, I'm happy for her and her haircut, but like,
oh, yes, that
this
haircut
is obviously why this news is coming out.
You know who I was Googling last night last night was Thursday. Thursday nights are when I Google Kate Blanchett. And I somehow missed the interviews that came out around the time she did Carol, where she talks about how she's had that she's like slept with many women.
What? I missed that entirely.
This is one of those things I'm like, didn't I know that? Like, I kind of thought I knew. I remember like looking at her husband and being like, oh, yeah, there's no way that that's the only person she's sleeping with. So she was asked when she was doing Carol if this was her first turn as a lesbian. And Blanchett replied, on film or in real life?
Hell yeah.
And then they asked her if she had had past relationships with women. And she said, yes, many times.
I love a casual come out.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me of a question I've been meaning to ask you, Melody. What's the gayest thing you did this week?
I did mention that I had two shows and I am feeling rusty. I'm nervous to do Zoom shows. I don't know, like weirdly more nervous than in-person shows because they're weird. So to psych myself out, I've been doing push-ups before I log on. And something about that feels like super
very Demi Moore.
Yeah. Who was one of my biggest crushes growing up, by the way?
Right?
That's where I join you. That was like my one older woman crush.
Yeah.
Just jumping to the floor and doing, it's the way I'm doing the push-ups. It's not like, I'm working out and doing 3 sets of 12 and like, no, it's like a quick panicked, like jump down to the ground and quickly get it out of the way. And like the quickness of it feels really gay.
I've never watched you work out, Melody, but I feel like you have this Monica Geller level of intenseness when you do.
Yeah, because we both used to be morbidly obese and...
I didn't even make that connection, but for some reason I'm like, this just feels like how Monica would work out.
Yeah, I am like, very intense.
Right, we're doing this.
Allie won't work out with me anymore. It's traumatized her, actually, and it makes her very uneasy to be around me when I'm doing it. Because I am really intense. Like, I take pre-workout mix, and my whole body's tingling, and it's super aggressive. I will say that. You're right on the money there. You want to know why I'm so intense? I just realized when I was losing that major weight loss period, I was doing exclusively Jillian Michaels workouts. And
that's a Monica Geller.
That's an intense dyke right there. Very intense. Controversial and, you know, fat phobic, I know now. But like,
not someone I'd want to invite to my grill out.
But it's like imprinted. I can only do workouts from like very aggressive, intimidating women. When I used to go to studios at ClassPass, there were like certain ladies I would go for. The most terrifying types are, can only get me to work out. We'll never have Jillian on the pod. We know she's problematic.
Yes.
Well, Carolyn, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Well, Cecilia and I both bought Crocs.
Why? Why'd you do that?
I've never owned Crocs before. I don't know if Cecilia has. She's been wanting them for a while, and I've always resisted, but I know everybody says they're so comfortable. But two things. I have a standing desk now, and I stand for as long a period of time as I can, and I have this like little balance board that I stand on, but sometimes I need even more than that. So I'm like, you know, if I get Crocs, maybe that will help me stand up more, and then nobody has to see them. But also I hear they're good for like gardening and yard work because they're like foam or whatever, so you could just like rinse them off if they get dirty.
I thought that's what they wore for.
I mean, I know like nurses wear them too.
Yeah,
there are a lot of different reasons why you'd want to wear Crocs. They're not leaving my property for sure. Cecilia got like warm insulated Crocs, which I think is a little bit weird. But then she was like, no, these will be my winter Crocs. I'm like, that implies
those are
that you're buying more Crocs. Yeah. Well, they look like Crocs, but then they have
holes
like,
and they're insulated.
They have holes, but there's like, but then the top of it, it's like fuzzy inside. And then the little back strap is made of like that like puffy jacket kind of material.
Sure.
They actually like look pretty cool. I don't know. For Crocs. Does anybody think that Crocs actually look good, or is it universally accepted?
No, I've like, been seeing them in Brooklyn. Like,
yeah.
Like ironic Crocs.
Oh.
Yeah, it's happening.
Does this not get us into our topic this week? Because today we are diking out with Joanna Bradley, who is a comedian, writer, and a performer working in both New York City and L.A., the dream. You can catch her hilarious performances in many videos produced by Above Average. You can see those on YouTube. And she has written for shows that you may have heard of, like Saturday Night Live, The Break with Michelle Wolf, A Little Late with Lily Singh, and the Eliza Schlesinger sketch show. Let's do it. Joanna, thank you so much for being here today and diking out with us.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I love this podcast.
How have you been? How's the pandemic been treating you 1 year in?
Oh, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I'm doing better than ever. I love everything everything that's deteriorated about my personality in the past year.
Yeah.
It's great.
Do you even know who you are anymore?
I know my social security number still. That's pretty, I think that's the extent of the similarity.
How long have you been LA based or bi-coastal?
Yeah, let's see. Not long before, maybe 8 or 9 months before the pandemic. Yeah, moved out here. So like summer of 2019.
First you thought like, oh, I guess this is a good place to be for the pandemic. And then the shoe went on the other foot.
That's right. Oh, yeah. In April, we were like, wow, I mean, I guess we're glad we're not in our really huge apartment building. With like 200 apartments and by the summer, seeing everybody like hang out in New York and just like love up on each other for that little respite between COVID blooms.
Right.
We both were like, I cried a lot in the summer. I cried a lot.
I didn't process anything until August. I got very sad and couldn't like, during that little respite, that's when it hit me. So I couldn't even muster anything to like go to a park hang or anything because I'd finally realized what just happened.
Yeah, somebody said to me the other day, and this is really dark. So if you guys feel the need to cut this out, I totally understand. But somebody said to me the other day, she's like, oh, I was texting with my friend, and my friend was like, I'm anxious and I don't know why. And I texted her back and said, 500K dead, ?
That'll do it.
I was like, oh, yeah. That like the free-floating anxiety that's been with me since I was, I don't know, five, is now been replaced by like a quite identifiable source.
Joanna, you know, other than commenting on the death toll from COVID-19, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Yeah, I know. Is that the gayest thing?
That's a gay response. Just a dose, a hard dose of reality.
It's a real lesbian response to be like, well, if we're going to be responsible, let's acknowledge the people who've been most affected. Well, when you said that before, I was like, oh, fuck, what is the gayest? I mean, I feel truly just like walking to my car is the gayest thing anyone around here, just the way that I walk.
Is it a Honda Fit?
Nar.
Okay.
It's a Toyota Corolla hybrid. Okay.
Wait, but a gay walk is...
A gay walk is...
A thing, and it's scientifically proven. I just found that out today.
Say more about that.
Okay, so according to Science Daily, they studied a case study of 8 gay men, 8 lesbians. Half of each were straight, actually. So never mind. Men, 8 men, 8 women, half were gay.
Got
so
it.
So we have 4 of each.
Control groups.
And they studied the way they walk. They had them walk on treadmills for 2 minutes as a 3-dimensional motion capture system, similar to those used by the movie industry to create animated figures from living models, made measurements from their movements. And based on these measurements, scientists and researchers determined that the gay subjects tended to have more gender incongruent body types than their straight counterparts. So hourglass figures for men, tubular bodies for women, and body motions like hip swaying for men and shoulder swaggering for women than their straight counterparts. So that swagger is scientifically proven.
Thank God.
Yes.
I also just want to point out, so I'm picturing like a bunch of lesbians and gay men on treadmills, and they had to wear those like ball suits. Like the motion capture, they had to wear those leotards with little balls on them.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of scientists were taking notes and being like, yeah, that one walks incongruously with its gender. This fucking freak. Like, could you feel like any more? You already feel like a science experiment, but like, could you feel like any more of one?
This Lady Gaga music video setup.
That's right. Fuck. That's demoralizing, but also encouraging. It makes me feel like it's not my fault.
I feel like I was walking around like a dyke today just because my body's sore from drilling so much. I'm like, why do my legs hurt from using a drill a lot yesterday?
I think you're using the drill wrong. What did you?
I think I am.
Did you strap that drill on? I don't understand why your legs are so sore.
My wife's bleeding out in the other room. I'm so sorry. All right. So walking to your Toyota Corolla.
No, I feel like that's not a good, I'm going to give you a real one.
All right.
A real one is polishing my vintage bar cart.
All right.
Yeah. That's probably the gayest thing.
That's it.
The whole thing needs to be polished.
Yeah. If you respect it.
Yeah. I didn't know if it was like mixed materials.
No, it's like, it's like glass and chrome.
Yeah.
You know, it's Italian. Anyway, it's a whole project, but it's really relaxing. At the end, you have a really shiny bar cart, so
yeah.
It's a win-win.
Polishing's probably got to be a good way to channel anxiety right now, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then, you know, as you're putting the bottles of alcohol back on, you're choosing what poison you're going to dump into your body to alleviate that anxiety even more.
Love it. So for our listeners who may not be familiar with you, can you tell everyone a little bit more about yourself, about your background? I know you from UCB when I started taking classes there and going to shows. Definitely enjoyed your comedy, consuming that.
What years did you take classes there? I'm trying to orient myself.
I started taking classes in 2012.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, first of all, UCB, RIP.
Right.
I did all that. That is sort of the extent of my comedy or acting training was UCB. So wasn't going to do it. I didn't do that stuff like in college or anything because I don't know. It just wasn't really around. And then kind of came back to New York where I'm from. I'm from New York and then was going to like go to law school and was like working at a law firm and taking the LSAT and shit. And then my older sister was a big fan of UCB and she was like, I feel like you should go be on a team there. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, I should. Yeah, I'll go down there and I'll tell them that I should be on one of their little teams.
One Herald, please.
Yeah, exactly. So then I got sucked into the never-ending eddy of $1,000 classes and made history. Just made history there constantly on that stage. Really blew people away. But it was fun while it lasted. It was helpful in many ways. And I credit it with like throwing me into the deep end of the pool as somebody who was like avoiding performance for a long time and then found myself just like, oh, fuck, you have to do this. If you want to get good at anything, you have to like go fail a million times and be so embarrassed. And I was a person who like was sidestepping embarrassment and humiliation up till then. So
same. Yes, same. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very real. I wasn't I did stand up. Did.
Same thing.
Because everything's past tense. But I, was really afraid of embarrassment, just like took myself too seriously. And then I took annoyance improv classes just so I could like get good at it's terrifying. Everything was so embarrassing, but it was like something I dreaded but made myself do the improv. But it really does help like get yourself out of your head and acting silly.
Yeah, because like stand-up is scary as fuck, but it's not as embarrassing. Like there's right. nothing more embarrassing than improv.
Yeah, truly.
Truly, yeah, agree. Improv was the first one that I did and was like the least scary for me to do. And then I did sketch, which felt scary because I was like, oh, people are going to criticize my writing and that's what I care about. And then stand-up was just felt like me walking into a room naked. And that took me like over a year from when I started doing comedy to work up the nerve to do that. And then I was like, oh, this is for me because I don't have to deal with other people as much.
Yeah, there is that benefit too. I always a little bit was envious of that aspect of stand-up where you could just like get up there and not
there's no email chain. There's no email chain where somebody's asking you questions that was already answered in the chain.
Come out to. Yeah. There's no fucking yeah. Exactly.
I miss it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love that you did at UCB, I got to see it twice there, was on your sketch team Bellevue, you put on a new episode of Seinfeld that you all wrote, and the episode was called The Leaning Susan, and you played the character Susan, who is dead in the show, and in this version comes back as a zombie and just plays it real straight, and it was my favorite thing. It was so funny.
That's so nice of you to say, and I will pass that on to everybody else, because I just want to say that
the
whole team, I will contact each of them separately, and I will pass that on.
Start an email chain.
Yes, and really, I'll be like, guys, what song are we going to come out to?
That's on YouTube for anybody who wants to watch it.
It is on YouTube. I think it has like a lot of views. It kind of blew up back then.
Yeah.
So such a funny, I can't even remember why we decided to do that, but then we just found ourselves. Yeah. It's a really arrogant endeavor to be like, why don't we just write a new episode of like the greatest TV show? Yeah. But it was really fun.
Well, we have you here today to reprise your role of Susan. No, to talk about the lesbian aesthetic.
Yes. Yes. The lesbian aesthetic.
What is that to you?
What is that? God. Is that a serious question or is that a rhetorical question? Because
I want you to answer it right now. Uh-huh. Okay. It's going to be out there forever.
Well, I don't want to corral anybody into too narrow of a definition, but I do feel like as varied as it can be, it has probably some commonalities between it. Certainly like, you know, various expressions of either like utilitarianism or masculinity, even if it's sort of like ironic masculinity kind of reflected through a prism of like whatever your gender expression is. I think there's ironic lesbian aesthetic and earnest lesbian aesthetic. That's how I divide it in my brain.
Okay. Yeah. Get into that more. I like that.
Well, as somebody who, I don't super engage in the ironic part of the lesbian aesthetic, although I appreciate it. I, in my head, think like, so for instance, it was my girlfriend's birthday, like, in January. And, I got her lots of real gifts, but one of the things that I also got her was this really fucking cool vintage Indigo Girls concert tee. And it's like from their first tour. Wow. It's so cool. I wish I had it with me, but, that to me, I was like, okay, I'm going to give this to her. And if I were to wear this, it would be earnest lesbian aesthetic. But for her to wear it, because she's kind of like, she loves a vintage tee. She's got like a ton of them. Every t-shirt looks good in her, but she's like kind of, she's like pretty femme.
It
verges on ironic lesbian aesthetic, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've made a shift to lesbian ironic aesthetic since like hosting this podcast, and we started a monthly show before the pandemic at Stonewall that we were doing, and like just for kicks, in the photo shoot I did to promo it, my wife had this like leather vest, which I would never have worn in my life before, but I'm like, I'm going to bring it to this photo shoot. And that was the one. And then everybody was commenting on the vest in the promo. So I wear it on stage to every show. And it's the only time I'll wear like a leather vest. And then under it, I'll wear a shirt, like I'll special order shirts. Like I have a tank top from like Melissa Etheridge's Cruise Line.
Yeah, and like, wait, that's awesome.
Like, that's not a shirt that I would normally buy for myself, but I'm like, this is so gay. I have to have it. And it feels like I'm wearing it in an ironic way. But then I like grow to like it. So now I'm like, maybe I should wear leather vests more. You know, maybe I should be wearing like Ani DiFranco tour shirts that I find on eBay, you know?
Yeah, maybe I should just do a full Ani DiFranco, shave my head and wear those like silver Bali earrings.
Yes.
And like a long skirt. wait, I want to know, first of all, what's the name of Melissa Etheridge's cruise line?
It's the Melissa Etheridge Cruise.
Okie doke.
Yeah. And I learned about it in the gayest way. I was seeing Jill Sobule play at City Vineyard, and she was like, Caroline, you'll never guess what I'm doing next week. I'm playing the Melissa Etheridge Cruise. Those lesbians are great. It's actually a really fun time.
Wait, I'm sorry. Are you on a first name basis with Jill Sobule?
I am. It's only because of the podcast.
Well, I'm disappointed that Melissa Etheridge put zero creativity into naming her fucking cruise line. I'm bummed that she didn't call it like a...
Come to my porthole.
Oh, fuck! Did you just come up with it? Was that off the cuff?
That was off the cuff.
Jesus Christ. That's fucking perfect. Come through my porthole. Yeah. I mean, I was going to make some joke about like those glass dildos that she used to sell.
I missed that.
Yeah, she used to. Completely. She used to like sell or promote these glass dildos. Used to probably being the operative phrasing here, because I don't know how long does that endeavor continue before everyone is like, that's a horrible idea.
Right. Yeah, it's a hazard.
Fuck me with that.
That is a crazy hazard.
Dude, there's so many other materials in the world. Why would you fuck me with glass? Yes, but that's a perfect example. Well, that is what you just described, the evolution of your relationship with your leather vest is like, that's the evolution of like so many ironic things that we partake of, whether it's like language or food or wardrobe. But it's strange when it's like a lesbian costume, because there's something sort of like, when you engage in it as irony, you're sort of making fun of your lesbianness.
Yeah.
But then when it crosses over to, I really fucking like this leather vest and Melissa Etheridge shirt, then it's almost like affirming in a funny way.
Right.
Now you're owning it. Because I have, for instance, with the Indigo Girls or with Ani DiFranco for that matter, I have such a long relationship with like being really into them and then being totally embarrassed and having to hide that fact, to then the point of like not even listening to either of those musical groups, to then coming back around now, like in my 30s, where I'm like, I don't give a fuck. It's who I am. It's mm-hmm. like my culture.
There's this comedian, Mindy Raff, who she used to do like a lot of characters in a lot of musical comedy. Mm-hmm. And she had this character that she did that was kind of like this vegan, hardcore feminist, lesbian singer, and would perform these songs on stage that were just like hyper feminist and parody. But it was before she came out. And she realized, like, looking back, she's like, I created my own, like, dream girlfriend. Like, then I came out and started dating women just like that. And I did it on stage as parody and, like, thinking that this was, a funny thing to do. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. It's because I'm actually, like, really attracted to these women who play guitar and have armpit hair and, like, throw paint on people wearing fur.
That is such an old school version of lesbian feminist. I love it. It's very vintage, very 90s. That's so funny. Yeah, like finding your way through like putting on costumes, like a child.
Yeah.
That's truly what it is. Like you're just putting on costumes and being like, is this who I am? Or I guess in her case, is this who I want to fuck?
Yeah.
Which is really, I like that discovery. Well, the episode that I listened to of this podcast, it was that one with the woman who runs a league of her own.
Oh yes, Joe McDaniel.
Yeah. So,
first of all, that was a fucking awesome episode, and I was
thank you.
So into that entire conversation, but especially everything she was saying about the way that she runs that space, and it just made me so fucking sad not to be able to go to it's hard enough to stumble upon a dyke bar in normal life to throw a rock and hit one. But it just made me so sad not to be able to go. And I was like, oh man, as soon as everything opens up, I've never said this in my life, but I'm like, I'm going straight to Washington, D.C. Coolest fucking city in the world, man.
Same for us, though. After that episode, you know, we have like this patron group on Facebook with some of our like more supportive listeners, and everyone was like, okay, road trip? As we're like all vaccinated, do we all like meet up in DC? I'm like, I'm in.
Get a bus and get on the bus and then and go to DC and make it like very, very fun and cool there for one night and then immediately leave.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the lesbian aesthetic, I loved her snapback lesbians.
Dude.
And that's how she just knew we would know what she was talking about, and we did.
That was such an inspired imagery. It took me back, like, it was like a visceral, punched me in the gut and swept me back to, like, 2002 at, like, Henrietta Hudson's.
Yes.
Where, like, there were so many girls like that.
And there still are. I mean, again, in normal times, but like one of the bartenders who works a lot of the show nights at Stonewall that we do, definitely a snapback lesbian, just like super straight hair. Yeah, the snapback and like.
Yeah, some don't evolve.
Some people find their uniform and they stick to it. It's such a uniform that conveys like. Yeah. That's why it's so specifically lesbian, because it's this really funny cocktail of like, I spent 40 minutes straightening my hair, but then I throw in this cap to show you that I'm like, kind of like Puck. I'm like a little rascal. And I'm
Little Rascal is perfect, because that is the vibe with a lot of lesbian ironic fashions to me.
Scrappy.
It's just like.
It's like a Peter Pan-ism.
Yeah.
Like when I think sometimes of, did you guys ever, I don't know if you guys were in New York when, Meow Mix closed before I was 21, but I went there obviously when I was like a teenager. That's the coolest lesbian aesthetic. Very fucking like 90s indie girl, like Lacia Haley in All Over Me vibes.
Okay.
You know, like a girl with like chopped off hair that she's dyed pink like badly.
Yeah.
And it's like everything's like a driving like Slater Kinney song in the background while like you have to fuck someone in like a stairwell. And you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Very fucking cool. And everyone plays the bass, and it's just, so Meow Mix was cool as hell. And then it closed. And then I think the owner of Meow Mix, I don't think I'm fucking this up. She opened Caddyshack.
Okay. In
Park Slope.
I've heard of Caddyshack, but I wasn't there for that.
Yeah.
Caddyshack was cool. It kind of dovetailed with like the, like when white Manhattanites decided that they were going to frequent Brooklyn, which I'll admit I was a part of that, in like 2004, 2005. And it was like a multi-level hangout where there was a lot of girls wearing like cutoff, like a vintage shirt with like cut off arms and like holding a PBR.
Yeah.
And like a lot of like long necklaces, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The long necklaces.
The PBRs were part of the outfits back then.
They were 100% part of the outfit.
I have so many long necklaces, and I just got this memory of like me in college with my long necklace making out the girl, but like the necklace was like getting tangled and everything, and then it like was literally falling apart, and I was like trying to hook it back together because it was like two loops of necklace while we were making out. Just
such a hazard.
Didn't want to mess the look.
Yeah, you can't go out without the necklace, but it is, yeah, it's a choking hazard.
Yeah. For sure.
Lassoing someone, strangling someone.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Do you think, like, because there are so many lesbian aesthetics, do you think that they're just like the aesthetic of the time and then part of that just like stayed? So it's like each decade we get a new lesbian aesthetic and we keep the old ones. So like the Renaissance fair lesbian is really just like an 1800s lesbian. Or, not 1400s. When was the Renaissance? No, it's, but yeah. Carried over. Don't make me talk about history.
That's a good question. I do think that there's a lot. There's always going to be like a, because you have this feeling of wanting to solidify the culture. There's always an excuse to do a callback to another time. So certainly, like a Renaissance lesbian is being like, yeah, I'm conjuring this archetype for everybody, and it brings like feelings for people. So I think that's why things like do live on. But I would say definitely depending on the scene and like the city and the type of group, like there's definitely many more than one per generation, one aesthetic per generation. Right. Cause I remember coming to LA in, I want to say like, yeah, 2012 maybe. And I went to a wedding where there was a lot of lesbians. It was not a lesbian wedding, but they let a lot of lesbians in for some reason to this straight wedding. They didn't check them at the door. And they had this uniform that was unfamiliar to me. And I was like, oh, this is some LA lesbian shit. It was like ballet flats and like skinny jeans with like a blazer with the arms pushed up.
Yeah,
and often like a tangle hat or a fedora.
Yes.
Okay.
That reminds me of the fashions in The Real L Word, which was some LA shit. Yeah.
That was me when I lived in Atlanta, minus the fedora. But when I lived in Atlanta, which I feel like is LA, but like landlocked and in the South. But you have like the bad traffic, the warm weather, kind of an entertainment industry going on. And I definitely wore, when I went out, ballet flats, skinny jeans, and blazers with the sleeves rolled up. For sure. For sure. That's really funny. Sad.
Oh, it's such a funny look to me because it's like, what are you trying to convey? You're trying, I'm not sure. It's a little femmy, but the blazer makes it like, I don't know, like you're trying, everyone's trying to be like a femme top. I don't know. It's very specific.
That's exactly what I was trying to convey, that I'm a femme top.
It's just everyone's like, it's like the equivalent of like the gay men in the 60s wearing like a bandana in one pocket or the other. It's just coming out and being like, the fedora and the blazer means like, yes, I'm very dominant, but the skinny jeans mean like, I don't know. I'll role play with you. I'm not sure.
When you were first coming out, did you notice like a change in the way that you presented yourself? Like, were you scared at all of like looking too gay?
Show me someone who was never afraid of looking too gay. And like, I don't know if that person exists. And
Leah Delaria.
If they do. Sorry.
Leah Delaria.
Yeah, out of the womb. Out of the womb, just like doing her like jaunty, like looking.
She's like,
woman
nice
up and
cunt
down.
Mom.
Yeah. Honestly, probably. Probably, right? God. So intense. yeah, definitely. I was definitely afraid of that, but it also sort of, it happened at the same time. I was like, young. I was like 13, and it happened at this. Like, I sort of came out fully at the same time as I had gone to like a camp. I had been going to this camp for many years. It was a very like outdoorsy, crunchy camp, like in Vermont. Like very like a lot of like gender fluidity, a lot of like really cool shit actually that made, you know, kids feel not so weird. It wasn't like a camp for gay kids, but
right, but it made them gay.
Yeah, but it did turn the kids gay, and I will tell you the name of the camp now. It's a wonderful place, but the crunchiness, kind of like Venn diagrammed with the outdoorsy crunchiness kind of Venn diagrammed with me coming out. And I do think it just happens to be that that is one very strong lesbian aesthetic, is that sort of granola Birkenstocks vibe. So I did come back to school that September, tried to get away with not wearing a bra. Mm-mm. Because had like already definitely had C cups for like a full year before that.
Oh, wow.
So definitely tried for like the first couple weeks of school to pretend I was still at camp and like rock a like belly chain made of hemp.
Oh my God.
Birkenstocks. Or when it got cold, wool socks under Birkenstocks.
And yeah, like of course, a
shirt with no bra and like patch pocket jeans. And then one of my friends started calling me Sags, and I put a fucking bra on. I was like, okay. And I took the belly, Sags. the belly chain.
Kudos to that friend. That's a great name.
Yeah. Thanks, Jake. It was super creative. The belly chain started to smell. I remember that somebody was like, that smells. And I was like, yeah, it's hemp, and I've been wearing it for 4 months. So been getting it soaking wet in the shower and then leaving it on my stinking adolescent body.
Never considered a hemp belly chain.
I've never considered that either. That's amazing.
So, and I also feel because that, like, the Gen X aesthetic is also, has the same earnestness, like, of the crunchy aesthetic where it's like, ripped jeans and like thoughtful earth tones and whatever to reflect the general, like, you know, the Gen X vibe has a similar, like, we're gonna help the world, man. Like, look around, like, wake up, everyone. It's not just about being a consumer. It's like about music. Jesus. Seattle.
Okay. Seattle.
Whatever.
Yeah. And that's coming, and it's in vogue now, and that's why Gen X 90s aesthetic is just constantly on my mind now, because it's all I see on TikTok.
I'm not on TikTok, but people send me videos from it. Are there a lot of kids who are like, are young people fucking with that Gen X aesthetic?
Oh, definitely.
That's wild. So they're imitating their parents. They're doing like when I was like a kid and for Halloween, I was like, I'm going to dress up like a 60s person. And my parents were like, okay, here's like a sweater. This is embarrassing.
So another thing with like lesbian aesthetic and especially being from New York, like a lot of times you talk about like, oh, it's really hard to tell like who just lives in Brooklyn and who's a lesbian. Like there are, sometimes have been like overlaps. My thing that... My ex-wife told me that I shouldn't say this because it's rude, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm like, the way that you can tell if they're like a lesbian is one too many accessories.
What do you mean by that? That's really funny.
There's just like something there and it's like, all right, you could have done like without one of these things.
No, completely. It's the way that like whoever styled the L word, you're like, okay, does she need to be wearing like a hat and a leather cuff and... several necklaces.
Yes. Yes.
It's too much. It's a little bit of like a, like, I always look at pictures of, do you guys know who that showrunner Amy Sherman Palladino is?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So whenever I see her on an awards red carpet, I'm always like, I know she's not a lesbian because she's married to the guy, her husband. But I'm always like, yeah, she dresses like a lesbian because it's just too much.
Yeah.
It's like,
for sure.
She's a magician. She's a goth magician.
It's the top hats.
Everything. Yeah. She just always seems like she's doing like a good day to you. Yeah. Like it's just a flourish. It's too much. Yes, you're right about that.
When I moved to New York, I'm like, okay, there are a lot of people that it is like very hard to tell if they're queer, if they live in Brooklyn, or is everybody in Brooklyn queer? So I feel like that is also more of the Gen Z aesthetic, is that like Gen Z queers, they have a look that's like very queer, but it's also cool. So straight people are dressing like that too. Like yeah. Gen Z lesbian TikTokers are influencers.
Yeah.
So straight people are dressing like them. So it's just, yeah. Yeah.
And we know that like straight people have always ripped off like gay style, but it's
right.
A little more surprising when they rip off lesbian style, I will first of all say.
Because fashion is historically for gay men and straight women.
Yeah, right, and honestly, we should stay the fuck out of it because we have no business dressing ourselves or dressing any, because we are, as everyone knows, lesbians are fucking blind and we have no aesthetic sense, so we should just put on some fucking burlap sacks and fuck off. but yes, thank you, God of gay men, for making all the clothes and the fashion of, in the world, and for making the world beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. If I see a picture, if we're just talking about photos, harder to tell in just a static photo based on how somebody's dressed. Like you could fool me more easily that way if we were doing like queer photo hunt at a bar.
That's the only way I've experienced people in a year.
Yes, right. That's true. That's basically true. But if it's a video with movement,
right.
Movement or voice or anything like that. I mean, then the walk, as we know, the walk, the voice. Yeah. I have one time seen my, not to get too much on a tangent, but I have one time seen myself on film where I was playing a straight person, and you can't hear anything I'm saying, and it's truly just a montage. So it's a really quick shot, but I'm gesturing to someone in it, and I'm like, God, you can tell that I'm gay from the way that I just moved my arm. Like, and my straight friend with me, he was like, yeah, no, you fully can. And it's like far, it's like a wide shot. And I just do this, like I do that with my hand. And it was an immediate giveaway. So I do feel like any movement is a clue. Yeah. But if we don't have movement, here's the uniform that I see, at least around LA, which, God, I wish I was in New York right now. For so many reasons, but one is because the fashion is so much better and more interesting there. And there's just more of it. Like you only see like four people on the street a day in LA. But of the four people that I've seen in the last 2 weeks in LA, the look that I keep seeing is that like Billie Eilish look of yes. Like, okay, ugly Balenciaga sneakers, the like high water wide leg jeans of a color. Kind of high-waisted, then like some sort of shitty like windbreaker material, and then like an intentionally bad dye job on a center part, and then like really small lens sunglasses that are like lime green. Now I fucking hate this look. I think it's awful. I hate the ugly sneakers, whatever.
The intentional bad dye job is such a thing.
It's such a thing. And it's rude, man. It's fucking rude. Cause I'm like, you know what, dude? Like, COVID notwithstanding, if you can afford Balenciaga sneakers, you can go get your hair dyed properly. And, like, it looks bad. This is why I'm not into, like, ironic dressing in a certain way. Because I'm just like, if it doesn't look good, if the shapes and colors are bad, why are you doing... Whatever. But I see that and I admit that that is perhaps, like... that is like a Gen Z version of queer dressing.
Yeah.
And that is definitely hard to tell. Like I see like people who seem to be presenting as men dressed that way, and people who seem to be presenting as women dressed that way. And they all seem kind of either they could be queer or straight. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm sure that comes from, yes, the queer kids on TikTok.
I feel like there's a lot of 90s repurposing now in fashion, but also I feel like that's early aughts. Like they're wearing those ball chain necklaces too, and that like UFO-y kind of pant, like feels like this goth early aughts thing coming back.
Like the mall kid aesthetic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like a kid who got dropped off at the mall by their parents, and they're going to go like to Claire's Accessories and blow off steam by getting another piercing.
Yeah. Get some accessories at Spencer's.
Although the ball chain necklace, like I wore the ball chain necklace when I was like 13, and that was the late 90s. And I feel like that was that the early aughts version of the ball chain necklace is already a hearkening back to the 90s ball chain necklace.
Yeah.
Which for my reference was like a Jordan Catalano thing.
Right.
Yes.
One thing that I think is universal for the lesbian aesthetic is comfortable footwear. But then if you are wearing stilettos as a lesbian is like super subversive. It's like I'm making a choice to be very uncomfortable and dabbling in straight woman culture.
I will say there was a period in my life, probably age 14 through 17, when I like weirdly would dress like very femme at times. And I definitely owned heels and I definitely like went out wearing like very high heels, which is wild to think of now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thought of it more as like, I think you're right that there is something subversive about it because like, one of the things about being a lesbian is like, is being like withholding, especially from like men.
Right.
And I think as you're maybe like finding your way through your gender expression and your sexuality and sort of your place, whether or not you want to court that attention, which very quickly I was like, oh no, I don't want that attention. But I think at like that adolescent age, I was maybe still wondering if like, oh, could I like show them a picture of what they think that they want? That is by like dressing in this super femme way and then withhold it. And is that a fun experiment? which is weird because actually now, like I was just thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, well, two things. Number one, a thing that I hate is when straight women go to red carpets or whatever. This is just where I see it happen. And they wear menswear, but they undercut the masculinity of the menswear by doing like really big lips, like big red lip and like really high stilettos and like big hair and like low cut to be like, I'm wearing a boy's clothes, but I'm still a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like Frances McDormand, who's like, I'm showing up here looking butch as fuck.
Yeah. Frances McDormand rolls up, no makeup and like fucking lace up Merrill hiking shoes.
Yeah.
So that for me is like, it's almost, that's the opposite thing. It's like the attempt on this part of straight women.
Yeah.
At subversion, but they can't commit to it.
Right.
They can't just be like, oh, I'm going to like wear menswear. And then,
it has to be like a bralette under the blazer.
No shirt under.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Their nipples are out.
The décolletage coming out. Right, exactly. And cut in that like really straight woman, like when they cut a suit jacket in for straight women, they cut it like shink, shink, like this really acute angle. So you're supposed to look like a fucking like cartoon character. But I was actually just thinking the other day, I was like, I'm very into menswear, which is just what it's called, even though that's like not a super inclusive term, but like day to day, what are you going to do? That's not something I'm willing to like picket line about. There's a lot of discussion in the menswear community, which is overwhelmingly rich and overwhelmingly white, about ways to be surprising, subversive, and unique. So this is a thing that like the white men of menswear struggle with daily. They're like, how do I stand out from the crowd? Because they've never stood out, and they're like, that's their burden to bear, is they're like, I've never been anything but like a default
because of Harry Styles.
Yeah, right, exactly. They're like, well, I'm not willing to do that because that's scary and gay, but
but they do the socks. Do you remember that boom
of fun socks?
Fun socks.
Yeah, that's the only way they can express themselves. We're like pocket squares socks. Some of them will grow their hair out. Some of them will, like, in Europe, some of them will wear, like, some jewelry.
Right.
It's a very, very narrow opportunity for expression for them. Because they're always talking about that, I often will, like, read these things and be like, oh, just by virtue of being a woman who dresses in real menswear, not, like, fucking red carpet Jenna Lyons menswear. Sorry about it. She's great, but come on, girl. Your heels are too pointy. Just by virtue of doing that, I'm like, oh, I get this. It's such a automatic buy-in. Like, I'm automatically stand out. Like, if I went to any event, if I ever went to, like, any menswear event, I would automatically stick out and I wouldn't have to do anything. I wouldn't have to, like, get fun socks. I would just have to be like, oh, I'm wearing actual, like, a tailored jacket that's been tailored in a men's cut, and I'm wearing men's shoes and, like, proper cufflinks, et cetera.
Yeah, it's the burden of being Paula Poundstone.
God bless her. I mean, talk about a vest. Yes, she is a woman who has been rocking menswear in a straightforward way for 35 years, I guess.
There's also this lesbian aesthetic that is probably closest to where I've been at, and probably what I'm repping right now, which is like V-neck sweater. It's like solid colors. It's just like very safe choices, and you have your staples.
That's all I've
and you done. Know they work. Yeah, like
because I'm afraid to embarrass myself, so yes. I've never like gone for the ironic lesbian look or anything because I'm.
What's your staple?
It's like a white. It's literally a white V-neck T-shirt, a denim jacket, and like the skinny jean and like an ankle boot. It's the black skinny jean.
Hell yeah.
Is that normcore? I'm also reading like, yeah, what is normcore then?
No, normcore is like, because normcore is beyond. That's like some like Nathan Fielder bullshit. That's like tucking my polo shirt into my khakis that are like intentionally a nauseating color.
Dockers.
I did have a lot of polos at one point. That felt like a very lesbian thing.
The lesbians growing up at my high school were like cargo shorts and two polos popped, like layered polos popped collar.
The layered polos and then the shorts for a while, those plaid shorts that like every lesbian.
Yes.
At least when I lived in Atlanta, every lesbian, like you'd go to the
pastel-y
bar.
Plaid.
Yeah, the patio at my sister's room was pastel, plaid, lesbian, just a sea of them.
Yes.
You couldn't tell people apart.
And they're the long shorts, but they're cargo shorts, but they're in a, what do you call that?
Yeah, they go to your knees.
Madras.
Yeah.
Madras prints. Yeah. Isn't it funny how that lesbian uniform very quickly, like, you've gotten so gay that you've just come all the way back to, like, straight male lacrosse player?
Frat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because that was the thing, too. Oh, there was, I forget the name of this bar in Atlanta, but there was a bar. They had, like, the New Orleans, like, giant margarita machines. And on the second floor, there was, like, this huge balcony. And all the guys were just, like, this variation of a frat boy. And you would drive by it and be like, that's the last place I'd want to be. And then you show up at my sister's room and every dyke is dressed like that.
It's really funny.
And you're like, I feel safe here.
Yeah. For some reason,
these ones won't roofie me.
That's right. I know, right? There is something subversive about that, but it's like, it's always hard to tell, are you doing aspirational or subversive?
Right.
Because part of that is, like, wanting to be part of, like, I've known so many lesbians who dress that, like, a sort of watered-down version of that, like, Ivy League style.
Yeah.
Ivy job.
Yeah.
There's a little bit in it that's, even, like, with Fran Lebowitz, I'm like, so you're wearing Anderson and Shepard. Like, that is, like, the tailor of Savile Row. I mean, that is, like, the epitome of tradition. And so at what point is it, like, oh, I'd like to be part of, you can never fully be part of it.
Yeah.
But I even think about that for myself. I follow all these, like, whatever, menswear and clothing accounts on Instagram. The other day I started following this guy who is like an English teacher, and he's like very fucking thoughtful, and he talks a lot about like inclusivity in menswear, talked about like across race lines, across gender lines, like he's just like on a different level from like the regular schmoes who are talking about fucking like watches and like the break in their trousers and Negronis and shit. But I was like reading, I was reading something he was posting about, and I started to feel like guilty myself because I was like, oh God, like, have I gotten too, like, does my being a woman and being a lesbian necessarily exempt me from engaging in a sort of, in a exclusive culture? Like, if I put on, like, an expensive pair of, like, tailored trousers or, like, for that matter, like, I don't know, an expensive sport coat or something, and these things cost a lot of money, like, am I subverting it, or am I just, like, am I just goose-stepping along with the rest of them? I started to feel weird about it.
Huh.
But, yeah, I don't know. But I like the way it looks, so what are you going to do? My girlfriend, like, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, coined an expression to define my style as, she calls it French dad on a Sunday. Which I was like, that's beautiful.
I've kind of been all over the place. Like Melody was saying, I would be so afraid of, like, standing out. I wanted to be, like, noticed for my sense of humor when I was younger, but I didn't want to be noticed for my looks at all. So I wore just, like, very plain shirts from The Gap mostly. And my friends would, like, make fun of me for just wearing solid colors all the time, which is a great thing to make fun of people for. And
very cool.
And I didn't understand fashion. It didn't make, like, it just seemed, like, very scary in this whole world that, like, wasn't for me, because it seemed like, even before I knew that I was gay, it just seemed very much for, like, straight women or whatever. So it took a while for me to get out of that. And then when I realized I was gay, I became, like, high femme to kind of counter that and be like, I don't want people to find out that I'm gay and be like, oh, Carolyn's a big dyke now, you know, like, I had to counter that. And then,
so you had, like, t-shirts printed up that said, look, I'm not, like, a big dyke or anything.
Yeah.
Wear those around
with, like, lace.
People are like, oh, okay.
Yeah. A little bit of lace.
Oh, she's got the lace. Yeah. It was in pink. So I trust her. She's not some dyke elbowing her way in here.
Now I'm at a point, like, I can't believe it was only 3 years ago that I wore my first suit to a wedding as a guest. And it was, like, the best thing. I'm like, why didn't I ever do this before?
So,
like,
fun. Feels good.
I've never done it, and I want to. That's the style I want to, and I'm too afraid of, but I have big boobs.
So do I.
How do you do it?
You just have to, find the right cut for yourself. I do also find, like, you know, giving yourself like a sort of a nice deep neckline can kind of visually, like, makes that all kind of line up. Like, yeah. I would never button all the way and wear a tie.
Okay.
I'm not, like,
yeah,
flat-chested enough for that. That's, like, not a vibe I would do. But describe. Okay, only because Melody, because you're aspirational and you haven't done it yet. But describe, like, the look.
I don't
look
take any risks.
You'd like. I mean, that's cool. What's the look that you'd like to rock at, like, the next, at your first COVID-free wedding?
Well, Carolyn had mentioned weddings, and it, like, for. That's where I get the most, like, clothing dysphoria. I don't know, where I'm just like, what is my style? And, like with dressing up, like, I think I'm fine. I don't aspiration. Like, I will wear an ironic t-shirt or something and, like, I'll be fine. But it comes to more formal events. I know for a fact I feel uncomfortable wearing, like, restrictive dresses, like, you know, with, like, the plunging, all of that, and the heels. I can't do that anymore. So,
yes, you know that my about next, yourself.
Yeah. So then I just assume I want to go full suit, but then there's always the mental block that I'm, like, not flat-chested enough. It would look really boofy. Like, it just doesn't seem, like, conducive for. I would feel like a Volkswagen bug.
Like a Celine, huh? Like a Celine Dion one piece.
Yeah, something like that, like, with, like, a thinner pant. I've also seen, like, women do this boot cut with heels type of look. I don't like that. Just some boot structured kind of look. Something structured that I feel like I can't do because I'm so curvy.
Yeah. I totally get it. I'm naturally curvy too. But it's just a matter, it's truly a matter of tailoring. and like figuring out where to give yourself room and where to here's the main thing that I've learned. The main thing that I've learned is like, okay, because I'm like hourglass shaped. I've got like big thighs and a big ass. I need like a high rise, meaning like from the waist, the button of your pants down to like the crotch. I need that to be a high rise because that gives me like room there. But then I need these pants to then like very quickly taper and have like no break because I'm short. And this makes me look like longer. And these are like very simple things, but they like fucking change everything. But didn't figure them out till like, it took me a long time too. I don't think I wore my first suit to a wedding till maybe like, 8 years ago, maybe something like that. And for coming out of the closet at age like 13, I'm like, damn, that was a long fucking time. That took you a long time, bitch.
Yeah.
The fuck are you doing? So wait, what do you wear now? So if you, I know it's been a year since anyone's been to any event, but Melody, what's your in-betweener that you rock at a formal?
I just go high femme. Like, I'm just like, all right.
You're just like, I hate this, but I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll wear the heel. I'll be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't mind like high femme, but I feel like I'm not great at high femme fashion. So it's like, I'll get these dresses to a wedding and like sometimes it's great and sometimes it just looks like a dress I found because I have to wear a dress to this function. Mm-hmm. But then when I started going to like the suits, it's like the staff at the wedding is commenting on it. Like everybody is like, holy shit, there is a lady in the suit and she's pulling it off and we must come and comment on it. I mean, my main problem with dresses, because like the most important thing and like one of my favorite things about being a lesbian is the comfy footwear. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's like I can get away with it. Like, I don't need an excuse. I don't have to feel bad about it. I am wearing flats. Like, I have worn heels. I own heels. It's not fun for me. I'll wear them for like a show if it calls for it. Yes, they make my legs look good, but it sucks. And wearing dresses, like they almost always look better in heels. And it's like suits. I can wear these like fucking Oxfords.
Which is why I default to the dress high femme.
Yeah.
Because it just looks weird with a sensible shoe.
It looks with a sensible shoe and a dress looks, it's awful. Yeah. It's an awful midpoint that no one should stop at. You got to keep going. I totally know what you're talking about too. When you go to the function and you're the lesbian in the suit, every person wants to come up to you and they always do this thing I notice where they think that they're the only person who's ever commented on the suit. They think they're the only person who notices and they want to like affirm you. And so they'll be like, hey, I just want you to know, you look great. And you're like, thank you. And in my head, I always want to be like, yeah, I know this suit is $3,000. I know it looks great. Fuck out of my, like, yeah, I look great. What are you doing? But they're always just like, they're saying like they think this is your first time taking it for a spin and you're like not sure. And they're like, hey, I just want you to know, like, it's pretty cool to be gay. And you're like, oh, like you're going to be like, thank you. Oh, I'll stick with it.
I think we need to start wrapping up, but there are a few kinds of lesbians that we want to quickly, let's like do a lightning round of lesbian aesthetics.
Okay.
Some we just heard about for the first time from listeners, like what's a St. Patrick's Day lesbian?
We had a Chicago-based lesbian write in, her and her girlfriend's favorite lesbian aesthetic, St. Patrick's Day lesbian.
I'm guessing that this person, now maybe I'm wrong, but in my brain, she's a marriage between the cargo Madras shorts person and the snapback lesbian, right?
Yes.
She definitely did her hair, but she loves to drink.
Yeah, she's a Midwestern lesbian, in my mind.
A Nelly lesbian.
Like, Mama, Nelly? Yeah. I guess just a lesbian that dresses like Nelly, like a basketball jersey and like maybe some chains with like diamonds or fake diamonds on them, stuff like that.
Yeah. Some sag.
She said it was because she wore boxers, and yes, someone called her a Nelly lesbian because of that.
An older dyke apparently was like, "You're a real Nelly lesbian."
All right, don't like. If ever, just as a PSA, if ever we're going to like designate other lesbians, characterize them in any way, and attaching them to any kind of pop culture or anything, never say it disparagingly. Always say it in a cool way. Always be like, right, it's cool, you're a fucking Nelly lesbian.
You're a Billie Eilish lesbian.
You're
a Justin Bieber lesbian. I love
you're
it.
Justin Bieber lesbian.
Justin Bieber lesbian was...
is a thing.
Had a moment. Oh,
that had such a big moment, didn't it?
Yeah.
God.
Mm-hmm.
It was huge. Crazy.
Yeah.
Cottagecore lesbian.
I'm completely stumped.
Yeah.
Is that a yoga... I'm... cottage core, and I'm just thinking someone who eats cottage cheese and has a very strong core.
It should be.
It has a lot of protein, actually.
Yeah, so. It should be.
Cottage cheese. So we were just talking about this on a live broadcast with our listeners, because it's a term that's really come into the zeitgeist over this last year.
Instagram, a lot of cottage
Instagram,
core,
TikTok.
Lesbian. Yeah.
And it's like a fantasy of this like kind of rural life. In my opinion, adopted by a lot of urban lesbians, but that's just me. But it's like a lot of like paisley, floral, a lot of like soft lighting in its Instagram post, to be honest.
Yeah.
I get it.
Like an ethereal.
A barefoot Stevie Nicks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Cottagecore, as in hardcore. Got it. Got it.
I think it really is just a repackaged Stevie Nicks lesbian.
That's awesome. I love that lesbian.
Other ones that we brought up, I was saying, like, I think English teacher lesbian is is a thing, which is also the same as like librarian lesbian.
Librarian lesbian.
Mm-hmm. Stripper lesbian.
Totally. You want to save her a little bit? You want to save her? I feel like she has a lot of piercings and stuff. She smells good. I don't know. Am I just talking about strippers now? Am I just talking about strippers? I guess. Yeah.
They always smell really fresh.
They do smell fresh. Yeah. I don't know how they do it. Yeah.
Studs. Yeah. Studs is a thing.
Yeah. Studs is a thing.
The eyebrow slit, I think, spawned from stud. And now just
that's
flourishing into all the different lesbian. Yeah, it's slit, a thing on TikTok. Like, it's like a signal. A lot of it now is just like signaling online and building community while like they can't go to gay bars right now, like younger queers.
So
is
that become like a signifier?
Yeah.
Yes. Shaving a slit in your eyebrow.
Oh, okay.
Which I used to think was exclusive to studs historically, but now it's just like you're seeing femme girls, any kind of dyke wearing or sporting it.
Is the term lipstick lesbian still relevant?
I don't fucking think so.
Yeah.
Because lipstick has gotten so queer.
Feels 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because everyone wears lipstick now.
Right. Well, any last words or parting advice about the lesbian aesthetic, Joanna?
No, you know, one day when I'm done with show business, I'll just write like a 7,000 word article about it and try to get it published somewhere, just like an academic.
Looking forward to it.
So I have so many thoughts, but no more today.
Well, listeners, keep your eyes peeled for that.
Yes, please keep your eyes peeled for that. Thank you guys so much for indulging me on this subject.
Thank you for your time.
Yes,
where do you want to be found by our listeners?
Yeah. You know what? I'll be really real. I can't really be found. My Insta's private. I'm not on Twitter.
Good for you.
Look, if you see me in LA, wave. We'll be the only two people on the street that day.
Anything you want to plug? Or
No, I don't want to plug
it. I love
anything.
It so much.
Fuck that. But I love this show, and I hope you guys know, like, it's so cool to be adding to this type of queer content. It's great.
Thank you.
Guys, it's awesome podcast.
That was so much fun. Hey, we have a listener question that is kind of related to what we were talking about earlier. That wasn't even planned. Go for it, Melody.
So I hope you guys know what movie I'm talking about. But in the 90s, this guy made a documentary called My Date with Drew, where he records how he gets a date with his lifelong celeb crush, Drew Barrymore.
I remember that.
And she was my big crush at the time. My question is simple and logistical. How does one get a date with Barbie Ferreira? Any leads or ideas much appreciated? LOL. No, but seriously. I love Barbie Ferreira, too.
She's from Euphoria.
Yes, but I've been following her, not to be like an indie band fan about it, but like... it's been really cool to watch. Back before even Instagram, like Snapchat. I don't know how, but I found her on Snapchat, and she became the only reason I would go on that app because she would consistently update throughout the day, and I just thought she was so funny. And she was a model at the time. But she talked about how she's dying to act. So it's so cool to see her on, you know, one of the best shows on one of the best networks, the hell out of acting. I love her. I think she's so funny. And now I think she's so hot. She was a little too young at the time for me to see it. but especially the outfits
she's in her 20s.
And Euphoria, so hot. There's this one specific bondage outfit. The Euphoria heads know what I'm talking about. That really did it for me. How do we get a date with Barbie Ferreira?
Yeah, we just spent the whole first part of the episode talking about how creepy Demi Lovato's ex-fiance was in stalking her and trying to get a date. So I wouldn't recommend that approach. Also, if you're inspired by the documentary My Date with Drew, that guy, he was a film student who was probably doing this as like part shtick. You know, he's making probably more into making a documentary and like this is a cool concept than actually being like, this is my best chance at getting, or maybe both. Who knows what goes on in the minds of men other than men. But
let's find a mutual. Oh, I see Barbie follows Megan Stalter. I know Megan Stalter.
You know Megan.
So you... No.
Do not open that box. No.
We can't.
You know, I get the desire to want to do that and to think like, oh my gosh, I'm so obsessed with this person. I would love to date them. And you know what? It's worked out for people before. Rosie O'Donnell's ex-fiance, I believe, was a fan who started like sending Rosie poems.
Yeah.
And then Rosie was like, oh, you're a lot younger and hotter than me. Sure. Even though you live in a different state, let's try this. And, you know, if you want to be creepy like that, go for it. But that's usually not how people in the public eye like to meet people. And most people don't like to date fans of theirs.
Yeah, no.
I'm sorry if that's gonna bum you out. But as far as what I know from people who even are just like a tiny bit in the public eye, the last thing they want is to meet someone.
People are put off by any kind of fandom.
Yeah.
So honestly, your best bet is to ignore her.
Great advice, Melody.
Yeah, that'll work better than being totally fanatic.
Yeah.
Technically.
I mean, if you want to be a psycho about it, you can like befriend her friends and then somehow get an invite to a party and then ignore her there on purpose and like never once mention to her that you knew who she was or were super obsessed with her or anything other than just like a casual fan of the show. But yeah, it's not, you know, this is why it's never going to work out between me and Desiree Akhavan. Just kidding. I'm married. I love you, Cecilia. And yeah, this person's like, God damn it. 1-star review. I was hoping for step one. Go to the red carpet premiere. Step two, wear your Justice for Jenny Schechter shirt. She also according to Wikipedia, has a girlfriend. So I think.
Oh my God, she does.
Updated Wikipedia is, but she may be off the market. But there's nothing like playing the long game as a lesbian. So.
Yeah.
I just don't endorse stalking.
No.
IRL.
It's off-putting.
I'll give a joke answer. Buy a Google ad so that when Barbie Googles herself, there's like a sponsored ad from you that's like, I think you're a babe. I'm a babe. Hit me up. And then have it go to like a URL with a contact form for her to get in touch.
Yeah.
That's my suggestion.
I said get a billboard on Santa Monica Boulevard or something, you know, grab her attention that way.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to be a fan, be the biggest.
Yeah. Go really hard.
Make her laugh.
You'll
at
least. Get some press coverage.
Yeah.
Send your questions to dykingout@gmail.com and we will take the wind out of the sails of your hopes and dreams. You can follow us at Dyking Out on social media or at Dyking Out Podcast on TikTok, which is also social media, just not the one we're the most social on, patreon.com/dykingout. We're still on Wizio. We're still getting requests there. We're just going to throw out all the names. Jemmy, take your pick. We're there.
We're everywhere. Boop, Bop, and Dita. Check us out on Stereo, Jemmy, Wizio. Yeah, stereo.com/MelodyKamali or stereo.com/TGI Carolyn. Remember to follow the two of us so you get notified when we have our live conversations.
And you can chat with us or, again, bark at us and then have Melody immediately stalk you in real time and then take you down.
You know I love a hunt down. We got harassed. We got what? Bullied by a troll, clearly anti-gay. Before the end of our Stereo conversation, I found him. I know where he lives. I know exactly what he looks like, and I've found a few of his social media profiles.
So don't even think about it. You know what? I don't want to scare anyone off. Most of the interactions on Stereo are from listeners or cool people on Stereo, including Melvin. I hope Melvin's a listener now. Shout out to Melvin. Yeah. I hope you're enjoying your juice and your piano. Thank you for diking out with us this week.
And we'll see you next Tuesday, baby.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.